All right.
He's reading up on comics.
Mics are hot. I'm gonna continue trying to figure out what the fuck's wrong with my audio.
Okay. Well, so it's the Ray and Chad show for a little bit. Well, we know how this goes. No one else gets to talk for the next 2 hours.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much, pretty much.
The long-winded fools. Commence.
Yeah. What's up, man?
No, not much.
Yeah?
Just
How's life?
oh, not bad.
Yeah?
Not really doing much. Like I said, I've just been listening to Critical Role because I feel it can play in the background. I don't need to pay super close attention to it. If they all start laughing, I might rewind a minute to see what the hell happened. But I can pretty much keep abreast of what's happening by gazing at it once in a while. Now I'm up to episode 60, and it seems like they're stealing their story from Borderlands because the moon is a prison for a god-eating god. I'm like, what? Isn't that what Borderlands did?
Yes, yes, it
Yes.
did.
Not in this
So,
way, though.
well, that's pretty much all of fiction I've come to believe. It's all the same story,
Yeah.
and it's just your twist on it.
Well, of course.
As Penny Arcade once said, it's the same as every other universe, except in this one, something's wrong with their dicks.
Wow. I mean,
It's like the most stupid, difference. But
that would be a definitive difference.
yeah. But I was listening at work to the, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, the I Am Number Four book series.
Okay.
It's the Pediscus lore. I forget what the name of the author is, but aliens come down, they have powers, their planet was destroyed. The aliens that destroyed their planet are here now looking for them, and there's a charm on them. They have to be killed in order, or otherwise they're invulnerable. So they're hunting them down one after another.
Okay.
It's your typical YA title. It had
Okay.
some redeeming features, but
Yeah,
I
it
always
does.
every character or every they're called guards, the ones with powers. Every guard has different powers except for telekinesis. They all have telekinesis.
Okay.
And the more, I mean, the one guy can fly, and he
Okay.
has something where if he touches like metal, he can make his skin metal. Or if he touches like, or his, I guess his whole body becomes metal. Or if he touches, like, he has a rubber ball and a steel ball bearing in his pocket, and he holds them in his hand when he's fighting. And he'll like turn his arm into rubber, but his fist into iron, and it'll like sling it at people, kind of thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's Super
That's
Skrull right
kind of
there.
cool.
But his other ability is flight. And I'm like, they all have telekinesis. They can all fly.
Can they though?
Well, if you can pick things up with your mind, why can't you pick up your mind?
Well, it's not about picking up your mind, it's about picking up your body.
Okay. What about pushing against the ground?
Okay. Then you're really just sort of jumping and long falling.
Well, the movie, I think Chronicle, it was called, where the three like high school boys get they encounter some meteorite and they get telekinesis.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, they learn how to fly with it
Sort
and
of,
hold
yeah.
themselves aloft and move. And the more they do it, the stronger they get. So that's one thing. But, you know, they talk about, like, they use their telekinesis to, like, swat a bullet to the side so it misses them, or pull weapons out of people's hands. I'm like, just pull their arm out of the socket. Pull the teeth out of their head.
Well, okay, but the thing, what you're describing here is the basic matrix fallacy.
Matrix fallacy. Okay.
Check. Okay.
That's better. You sound much better.
That's better.
All right. So, wait, before you go any farther, Ray.
You're very, very scratchy now.
So. I don't care. Before it goes any farther, Ray, I know you like that series. You've talked about it in the past.
Okay.
We went and saw that
Chronicle?
No, the
Chronicle?
I am number 4. My mic died like 2 minutes ago. So I've been I've got some responses. And then Chronicle, you and I went and saw in the theater.
Yes, we did.
Like the weekend it came out, I think.
I think so, cuz I saw it and I'm like, that is my jam. Let's go watch that.
And it was super fucking dark.
I think that's what I liked, and
that was before we had the breadth of superhero movies that really did go dark.
What was that one with the little kid that was like Clark Kent kind of
Brightburn?
Brightburn. That was the one that I thought was just crazy dark. This one didn't have to be dark. I think it was just the circumstances of the kids' lives came into them. It kind of transposed them having powers. They have problems in their lives, and now they have powers. Of course, they're going to try to use the powers to solve the problems. And he goes and tries to rob a bank, and his dad beats on him, so he beats up his dad. You know, all kinds of crap. But yeah, I love that movie, and it was all found footage, so the movie really moved along, because the kid that was abused was like into the video camera documenting everything in his life.
Yeah.
So if I'm getting abused by my dad, that's what I want to do. Record it.
So you've never heard of the Matrix fallacy?
No.
Okay. So the Matrix fallacy. So Neo is the one.
Okay.
He is this just essentially...
He's the leftover variable, according to the story, right?
Right, but...
His equation that doesn't balance.
Right, but he has all the power. He can essentially make this world into whatever he wants it to be.
He can rewrite the Matrix while living in it, yeah.
Right, okay. But in doing so, he fights, he does these things. Like, you have very few glimpses of Neo actually doing, like, the level of badassery that you would expect someone to do who has this power. Like at the end of the first movie, when he just stops the bullets in midair.
Uh-huh.
And he effortlessly defeats Agent Smith. Like, you know, Agent Smith is, he's in slow-mo compared to Agent Smith.
Yeah, he has his awakening, yeah.
Yes, but then you go to the next movie and we're back to Neo doing kung fu and dumb shit. It was okay. Like he forgot that he could just, like, you know, shut this Matrix shit down. Jesus. He what?
He forgot he was Matrix Jesus.
Wow, Jesus, your mic died again.
But he didn't, because in Matrix 2, he fights all those guys in that room and he stops all the bullets.
Sure.
And it drops them all. And then they come after him, and the one actually cuts his hand. And right. He sees that they also have a toe in that powers outside what the Matrix allows. So then sure. He gets a little scared and fights that way. But also, problem with that is, in defeating Agent Smith the way he did, he created his basically dark shadow. I believe it's called the bad guy who has the same powers as him.
Sure,
because Agent Smith, it had the same powers as Neo, but it has it with the mind of a machine, so it sees it as, okay, if one doesn't do it, two will do it. Okay, four will do it. Eight will do it. 16 will do it. And, you know, just bombards him with duplicates. And then by the end of the movie, Agent Smith is flying around just like Neo and has all the same kind of understanding of the limitless power. So I see the fallacy, I guess, paradox or whatever it's called. But also see all the
Matrix 2
combat.
Matrix 2 shouldn't have started the way it did. There should not have been that stupid fight outside. It was dumb. If you look at the power that Neo has, that fight should just not have happened. Nope.
He also has yes, he can do all that stuff.
Yeah.
But his companions that are with him, like the Oracle, can't. So he can fly off and do all this stuff, but he has to try and protect her, I guess. I don't know.
I'm talking about when they're outside the meeting, or when they're at the meeting and...
Oh, he has that little fight in the hallway?
In the hallway that spills outside.
Yes.
Yeah. That should never have happened. He should have just made them all go away. He can do that.
Yeah, he should have just dived into them and rewrote them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the viewer would have said, okay, well, why didn't they become an Agent Smith?
Okay. That would have been a far more logical conclusion than suddenly now Neo is just deciding, I'm going to go back to fighting with my hands.
It'd be way less entertaining to watch him just Yoda everything.
Well, I'm not debating that point.
It wouldn't be nearly cinematic.
But correct. But who would carry him around in a backpack?
There you go.
I don't think he needs to be carried around in a backpack. He can just fly down Park Avenue and drag the entire island's cab population behind you.
Is this any better?
This is a lot better.
This sounds normal, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I figured out what it was. It was actually the microphone itself.
Huzzah. That bastard microphone.
Your microphone is a Zoomer and didn't want to work?
If my microphone is a replaceable part on the headset, and I had when I purchased a spare a while ago, it only came in pairs. I knew I'd need the other one at some point. Didn't know it'd be tonight.
Okay. So yes.
So yeah, it's the same with every. Every movie. One movie ends with this big problem that must be solved the next outing. And then the next outing, the problem is solved in 5 minutes. So yeah. They can tell a new story. That's every sequel.
But the problem with Neo in The Matrix is that when it's convenient for the writing, he just doesn't have the same power levels. And it's...
They could have explained that by putting him, like, when they went to see the, what was his name? The Malfusion or whatever the fuck it was. The French guy.
Merovingian,
yes. When they went to see him, he was in a different part of the Matrix. So, yeah, he could rewrite the Matrix, but not this hacked, pirated 4-4. Yeah, they could have easily explained away that.
They could have. They chose not to.
No, they didn't think of it. They didn't see it from outside itself.
Correct.
That's why I have editors. That's why I have people read your shit.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they can say, hey, why is this happening? I think I mentioned this before. Patrick Rothfuss did an interview, and he was talking about beta readers. And one of his beta readers mentioned that he had this system where people could basically talk into a shell here and be heard in the next country. You know, and he goes, that's a phone. And the beta reader's like, that's a phone. As soon as you have that, you have free, quick exchanges of information. And then your whole civilization, the way you've organized it in this fantasy realm, dissolves. Because if one guy over here can have it, everyone can have it. You know, and it basically just, you put this thing in your story thinking, oh, that's cool. But because of its inclusion, it makes the rest of your story kind of moot, which is what you're saying. Putting Neo in that story makes the story moot, because if he's God, he's God.
Yes. Yes.
So you have to explain away why now he isn't God. And honestly, that thing I just mentioned, the whole pirated, hacked corner of the Matrix where these asshats hide out would have totally explained, at least to me, because, you know, I'm
sure
that's how I'm picking to explain it.
Sure, but that would have worked.
Yeah, these are all reasons why I still don't write a book. Because I get...
That's no reason
three,
not
to, but that's... I get three ideas into it, and I realize, well, that don't work because everything. So I still come up with ideas. Well, I mean, I come up with a decent one that kind of lives in the back of my head for longer than a week. I usually shoot Jeff a text. Here, do something with this. Or add this kernel to something you're doing.
I mean, the biggest problem that a lot of writers have is they get precious on the details. And I can say this because I've been precious with the details, and that's why I have only to this day allowed three things that I've ever written to see the light of day.
Yeah.
Well, in a fiction setting.
I've only allowed just under 300.
Yes.
You just gotta let things go, I guess.
Right. I get too precious and don't want to change things, or I get too worried that, you know, in trying to fix the problem, I'm going to make it, you know, stupid or whatever. So I just, yep, it's dead. And that's where I leave it.
Yeah, I think the solution is, it's the Jim Butcher, Harry Dresden kind of solution. Just always make it so your hero, your protagonist, is punching up. He's always out of his weight class. He never really understands what's going on. So when something works for him, cool. But the next time, fuck, that didn't work.
Hey, now you're giving away both my books.
Sorry. I think that's what makes that series work, though, is he is always, you know, fighting tooth and nail to get through everything, flying by the seat of his pants, and just praying this is the one legendary punch that gets him out of this fight. And sometimes he's a little smarter than the people coming after him, or he thinks of the one thing that they didn't. I think one of my favorite Harry Dresden escapes was he was on the water beetle, the old shitty boat he had. And he generated all that fire magic, which comes from somewhere in Jim Butcher's magic system. One energy comes from, if you want to concentrate one type of energy, it has to come from around you. So in taking all this fire from around him and firing it straight up into the air, he actually froze the water outside the water beam because the lack of heat that he just basically sent somewhere else. I just thought that was kind of neat.
And my favorite moment involved Butters and a drum. I'm sorry, a one-man band kit.
Yes, that was freaking cool.
And a dead dinosaur.
Yes. And a T-Rex skeleton. Which, in Chad's point, a lot of readers bitched about because that would not be a skeleton. That is rock. More importantly, if it's on display, it's probably plaster.
Mm-hmm.
True, but that doesn't make for an entertaining. That doesn't.
That does not. It does not.
It doesn't make it nearly as entertaining when it's stomping down the street.
It's way more fun to have a 3-ton spectral freaking dinosaur with a freaking T-Rex skeleton inside of it running down the streets of Chicago.
Absolutely.
Stomping taxis.
And it's really only going because you've got somebody playing polka music on his one-man band kit.
Beating a drum and basically making the zombie think it has a heartbeat. I think the coolest part about that scene was when he cut his finger and made the shield around it, where he drew the circle and then empowered it, like he watched Harry do, and just trusting that it would work. Because that way he could stand there and keep beating the drum, and the shit around him wouldn't kill him.
Yeah.
Because that was a fucked up fight. That's the one where the old lady died, right?
I believe so.
Or she got put in the little girl's body.
I mean, for what it's worth, Chad, I think it's a series you would enjoy.
Okay. Especially book 3.
Yeah. Because that's when that butthole gets introduced.
That's when Michael gets introduced.
Well, you need Michael to get to, oh my God, what is his name? The hanged guy.
Oh,
Chad?
Nicodemus.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a group called the Blackened Denarians. Basically the 30 pieces of silver that were paid to Judas.
Uh-huh.
Those
coins had to go somewhere.
Those coins are cursed, and inside each of those coins is a fallen angel. And to possess one of those coins is to allow that angel into you. Now, granted, you can fight it for control, or you can let it take control and work with it. Either way, your soul is forfeit. But they all manifest as these different kinds of demons and monsters and powers.
Sounds like a great one.
And they are led by Nicodemus.
His wife and daughter. The other side of that coin, so to speak, are the Knights of the Cross, or Fist of God, or whatever the hell you want to call it. Each of them wields a sword that is supposedly containing one of the nails from the crucifixion woven into its metal or hilt or something. One of the swords is
the dick nail?
One of the swords is basically Excalibur.
Hmm. Okay.
The other one is a
it's like Masamune, or it's
a famous samurai sword, yeah, and another one is a famous Russian saber. from folklore.
Yeah. Cool.
But those guys are basically out in the world hunting down Denarians. That's their job. And everything in Jim Butcher's universe of the Dresden Files, no matter what kind of supernatural it is, be it magic, be it the Knights of the Cross, the Denarians, it all runs on, I believe this is the way it works.
Okay.
Basically boils down to faith. Harry has faith in his magic, so therefore it works.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Go for it.
So there are three dudes with swords.
Mm-hmm.
There are 30 denarians.
Not quite. The church actually has reclaimed
some
a number of coins. There's roughly 12 to 18 denarians out there.
Okay.
But they don't all work together. Mentioned Nicodemus. He leads the group that we encounter most often. But his wife is also in possession of one of the coins. And she sometimes works with him, sometimes works against him. That's the beauty of the bad guys. They don't always get along. So it's kind of hard for them to work together. The whole rule of two, Sith consuming each themselves problem.
Well, I mean, that would be really hard to be married and both of you have these cool powers, but
yeah, you know, they're basically immortal. So
okay. So that kind of answers my question. So if the douche nozzles with the blades can kill someone that has a coin.
Well, the douche nozzles with blades, they're just human.
They're just humans in there. It's weird because Michael is Catholic and like militantly Catholic. Sansa, who is the Russian who has the I can't pronounce the name. It's the saber. Isn't he agnostic? I think he's agnostic. He recognizes that there is something, but he doesn't know that it's God. He just has faith in the sword.
Okay.
And so, then Shiro, the guy who had the katana, he was basically your typical blind swordsman. I mean, he wasn't blind, but that's how he played it.
Okay. So what happens like when one of these douche nozzles kills one of the people with a coin?
When they fight them, they try to give them a choice because, you know, they're the good guys. Are they though? Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way that they truly are.
Yeah, especially Michael. Michael is genuinely the good guy. Yeah. Even when you don't think Harry is, Michael is. When they face a Denarian, they give them a choice, like, relinquish the coin, give it up. And if they do, the coin drops, they turn back to human. Sometimes they age several decades because without the coin, they now have to catch up to their normal lifespan.
Uh-huh.
Which is the reason why some of them refuse to give up the coin. Sometimes they fight to the death. Sometimes they give up the coin and try to fight another day. Because I think Nicodemus has a few coins other than his.
Yeah.
That he's always recruiting. And at one point, Harry ends up with a coin.
Yes.
That would be a story I would be interested in. Because I like the sound of Harry.
But then you've got all the vampire courts and their ridiculousness.
And then the fairy courts.
And all of their insanity.
Okay. Harry actually has a fairy godmother.
Okay.
His mother basically sold him to
Kind
of. To Dolanache? Basically promised her son to the third, or the maybe the fourth most powerful fae in the Winter Court. To basically teach him, protect him, because she knew she wasn't going to be around.
And if you're talking douche nozzles, then there's the Wizards Council.
Those are douche nozzles.
Who are the fucking wizard police.
Yeah. The wardens. Those are the douche nozzles. But then, at some point in this series of books, you actually start to see their side of the argument.
I mean, is it like a Steve Rogers kind of side of the argument here?
I mean, no, they are, the wizards are definitely not all good guys. Okay. They have their own ambitions. It's very political. It's mostly human, you know.
Yeah.
But human, but I guess wizards are genetic because wizards live a lot longer than humans.
Huh.
That's how Merlin was around for so fucking long. And the leader of the Wizards Council is referred to as the Merlin. He's like the president Merlin.
It's a title.
Yeah.
So Merlin was a person and then became a title.
Yes.
I think he founded the Wizards Council. He basically organized them and said, hey, we need to get this shit under control.
Gotcha.
Their headquarters is in an underground compound below Edinburgh.
Okay. Huh. Interesting.
It's a very cool world. Yeah, there's a role-playing system based on it, but it uses the fate system, which I'm not a fan of. The dice with the pluses and minuses and blanks.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not keen on it. It's not a make a character and then play in this world. It's a everybody make a character, then let's explain how we know each other, why we care about each other, what else we care about, what we hate, why that place hates us. You know, it's just like, oh God, can I just play the fun character I wanted to play? So never got far when we tried to play that game.
I mean, it just sounds like a slightly different L5R starting system.
Yeah, L5R had a lot of interplay, but a lot of that was social challenges. I mean, you can't do a Topaz champion without having a poetry contest kind of thing, you know?
Well, but even before that, like during character creation, the 20 questions, like that's some heady shit. It took Boyer and I the better part of a Friday night to get through my character's 20 questions.
I did watch the Daggerheart videos, and their creation is very much like that, back and forth across the table. You definitely have to have a group to play that.
Yeah.
It isn't a, oh, I can't be there this week. I can be there this week. Oh, so-and-so is not going to. It's like when you play, you really need everybody that was going to play there, because right, it's important to have all those connections on the table and in play. And it just seems I think it seems like it's a role-playing, like one step more advanced than D&D. D&D, you can make a character sit down and play and be goofy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to, your story can come out during the play.
Sure.
Daggerheart, the Dresden Files, L5R, you kind of have to know where you're at in the world before you start playing.
Well, okay, but that Daggerheart Session Zero, though, that was not just character creation. That was also creation of their world that they were going to be playing in.
Yes, but that world also came. Matt had that world laid out, and he would tell them, this is what this is, this is what this. So if you want to be associated with these people, this is them, and this is what they, where they fit, and how they,
the different people, right, that sort of thing. But like locations and like they built the history of the world they were playing in as they were designing their characters, or at least some of the high points. Chad, have you seen it at all?
I think that no, also
I have not.
Okay, so there's a point where during character creation, Sam is struggling to come up with something, and he just starts spouting shit, and he's like, seep, and he uses this word seep to describe some event that happened underground, and just does it as this sort of throwaway, sort of catastrophic event. Like, this is why the people had to leave the underground, because of the seep and because of what happened. That informed so much of the development that happened in the adventure that they ended up.
Because, there was a city close to where he exited that was affected by the refugees of the seep.
Sweet.
So it was.
But that just illustrates my point that the people that are sitting at that table when you make your characters really need to be there at every session. You need to have that same group all the time. You can't just play without some of those people.
True. Having seen that stuff though, like the last, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe 5. Regular campaign 3 episodes have they've been doing some of the back and forth without having initiatives to do things and creating tension in a scene.
I'm not sure how that initiative works. Is it like everybody can take a turn, but he keeps track that everybody has taken a turn and then they start again?
No, because there were times where people went multiple times in order, but the few times that happened, it seemed very much like people were like, is it okay? I have an idea. Is it okay? I know I just went, I've got an idea, though.
Yeah, the team-ups were really interesting. And those seem like me and Jeff's character could tag team to, I'm the big strong guy. I can fastball specially. And in that case, we both make the roll. We both add it to it. And our damage, we each, if successful, we both roll damage. And it all applies to that hit that Jeff's character would inflict because my damage is added in there. It's basically a way for a group to surpass a creature maybe they should be fighting's threshold to actually damage it.
Yeah, that was, but it, yeah. that was kind of cool because in that you're taking the better of the two, like both people make an attack roll, but you take the better of the two attack rolls.
Yeah.
And then both of you roll damage.
Okay.
So.
And the way damage is done is very interesting. You have like 6 hit points. But say a wizard, if he takes 2 damage, that breaks his first threshold, so he will take a point of damage. But if he takes 8 damage, that breaks his second threshold, so he actually takes 2. But if you do 12 to him, it breaks his third threshold, and now he'll take 3 damage from your attack.
What?
And you can spend armor. You have like 3 armor points. If I'm wearing armor, my armor is 5. I can expel one of my armor points to reduce the damage you did. So taking it from a 12 to a 7 which means 7 doesn't break my second threshold, and I only take 1 point.
I'm gonna just smile and nod and pretend.
It's a little.
It sounds complicated. I promise. If you watch the one shot, it makes sense.
It kind of answers all those people who say that's not how armor works. Just because I have more armor doesn't mean I'm harder to hit. It just means I don't take the damage when I get hit. And that's kind of the way it is. You have like the heavy armored guy, the fighter, his armor is 12 or 8, say. So he can reduce that, but he can reduce an attack that's incoming by one, by that metric of damage. So if he takes 15 points of damage, he can subtract 8 from it by expelling one of his armor slots. So he basically just kind of rotates and takes it on the shoulder. But that shoulder is now fucked up, so he takes one of his armor slots off. His armor still reduces everything by 8, but he only has that to use 3 times, say. But that changes it from him taking 2 points of damage to 1. And say you have to do, say 8 points of damage to break his first threshold. If you do 6 to him, he doesn't take any damage. He just kind of sloughs it off. So if he can use an armor slot to reduce the damage, to just basically ignore the hit, that's it. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the way Werewolf the Apocalypse did, like soaking damage and dodging. Remember all that?
No.
So you would take a hit and okay, I'm going to try to soak it, or I'm going to try to dodge that. You roll your dodge, and if you beat their successes, you know, you dodged it. But if they still had a success against you, they hit still. Okay, they're going to do this much damage because their strength is this, and that's how much damage they do to you. Well, I'm going to try to soak that damage. So you use your stamina or what, you roll. Mm-hmm. And say I was going to take 4 damage. I roll and I get 2 successes. Okay, I reduce that 4 damage to 2. So there's like checks and balances. So just because you got hit doesn't mean you're going to fall down dead. There's some chances to save yourself. But all that being said, all those movable parts, the combat did move rather fast because they all knew these things. Like, okay, I hit you for 7. I'm going to expel armor, which takes it to both. So, and then it's understood. So they moved faster. Now new players would have to have, you know, this explanation conversation between them to kind of understand it until it becomes second nature, of course.
Sure.
But it's an interesting system. It's just, I think when you get into all the really interwoven social points of the role playing, some people just want to hit shit. Some people just want to sit at the table and roll dice, make jokes, fight big monsters.
Uh-huh.
This game system, at its whole, if you're going to play it, you know, the way they're presenting it now, granted it's beta, the things are subject to change, this is a role player's system. That's not to say you can't take it and just say, we're going to play hack and slash and this is going to be the mechanics we use. Yeah, we don't have to do all this. You know, role playing connections and stuff.
Sure.
But, oh, there was one. What was the experience, Jeff? Remember the experience? Yeah, like you can, like my character's a fighter. And I fought in a war. And in that war, I lost a friend. So therefore, I'm very overprotective of new friends because I felt I failed that friend. So that becomes on my character sheet, overprotective.
An experience. And it gets you to call on to get a bonus to rolls.
Basically, okay, I'm going to try to intercede to protect another player. This calls into question my experience, so I get to add that plus two to my attack to better chance to do that thing that I'm trying to do. So those are interesting. You get one at plus one and one at plus two experiences, I think, at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just create as part of your backstory. And then much like Savage Worlds or those kind of things, you can try and argue that I should be able to use this for this this situation. You know, this brings into question my driving, right? Yeah. I'm a wheel man, so I should definitely be able to take this flight of stairs better. Those judgment calls the DMs have to make. But all in all, it's interesting. It's not the short little video I watched that basically just poked holes in the canoe. I think they were a little panicky about it. So once I watched it, it was a little more manageable, I think.
Yeah.
And all the rules are up there online. They have PDFs for each of the classes, like how to make this character, and all the cards that are basically your character's abilities. And is that where the spells come from, those cards? Are those the only spells you have?
It looked like it, but it also looked like the caster classes like got a couple of things at a time.
Yeah, they got like they got to pick a grimoire and then two cards. So I think the grimoire had a couple spells, and then it's kind of like making a Gloomstalker Ranger or a Beastmaster Ranger. You know, you choose between these cards. The Gloomstalker comes with this abilities, whereas the Beastmaster comes with these abilities. That's just how characters are divided. But it's kind of neat because some of the classes, each of the class has their archetype, but then there's another one that can also choose from. And so fighter has champion and it also has stalwart. Yeah. But the kind of paladin-esque defender character also pulls from the stalwart pile, but he has defender instead of champion. So you share some of the abilities with other classes. Just depends on your choices and which ones you pick. And then at higher levels, you have all kinds of cards, but you can only have so many active, so you have to bank some. So basically turn off this lower ability because I don't need it anymore, but I want to use these. And then those abilities have a stress cost. So if you desperately need that one ability that you set aside, you can take stress, which is kind of like damage. You have so much stress, then adds to damage.
It struck me as like wind in Savage Worlds.
Okay, yeah.
That damage that isn't really damage but can still fuck you up.
Or exhaustion in D&D. Yeah. Yeah, if you have too much stress, you can't draw on experiences or something. There's costs too. Level of stress you're trying to carry. But yeah, that's neat. I don't know how we got on the subject, but I think it was Matrix.
You said you were watching Critical Role at work.
No, I'm not watching it at work. No, or definitely
listening
not.
To it. I don't. You were listening
to it here at home.
There, I don't. Okay. And no, while you worked.
Yeah.
Okay. On something.
I was working on Clock Art the other day. I will take a snapshot of the carrier pigeons. But yeah, I was working on that the other day. Just need something that I can play and not really have to pay too much close attention to it. There's the carrier pigeon. That red circle is basically to represent where the window is on the card for the card art to show through. But I made a canvas for all the card art I need. So I was just going through.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? I thought it turned out pretty neat. I was just going to do the pigeon, but then I'm like, I'm going to give him the bomber goggles and let's put some missiles on his back. But yeah, I thought it turned out pretty neat.
I agree. I dig it.
But yeah, that's my requirements for, home entertainment right now, something I don't have to necessarily have my eyeballs on the entire time it's playing. Something I can, and Critical Role is basically a radio broadcast if you get down to it. They're just talking back and forth for the most part. So what have you guys been up to?
Not a whole lot.
Work still busy?
Yeah, I'm in the 2-day Kaizen event right now. It's super great.
Kaizen. The term sounds familiar, but I don't know.
It's a fancy way of saying that I'm stuck in a room with a bunch of other people while we decide how we're going to fix a problem.
Okay. And this is because they just won't listen to you and do it the way you told them to?
No, because we keep changing how we handle things as business.
Huh. So normal business stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. So, I just have to go through and listen and not be an asshole and
so this is where the real work comes in, huh?
Yes, this is definitely where the
real work. This is the hardest I've worked in since I've been here. Not telling you to fuck off.
Yes, this is hard.
I seen a meme. Said, tomorrow is National Slap a Worthless Coworker Day. If you don't know who you're gonna slap, call in sick.
Yeah. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, my job is getting to the point where it's starting to stress me out.
Really? Just
because, well, I took all week off last week.
Uh-huh.
And just, you know, sat around. Didn't get my strip done till Thursday. So I don't know what that says about me because I got my strip done Tuesday this week. Going back Monday was rough.
Yeah.
It's
that whole thing that went down that has everybody in a panic now is just making some people unbearable. They're not handling the stress well, and they're just making it worse for everybody else.
Mm.
And that person is my boss.
Oh.
That's and granted, this I don't want to complain about him. That's not what I'm trying to do.
Uh-huh.
He cares so much that he is panicking whenever he sees somebody not caring as much.
Gotcha.
Which is just making everyone else very dismissive. Because I think no matter how much they stress to us how important this is, we still don't know what they know.
Sure.
So we will never understand or feel the gravity of it. And I don't think freaking out over every revision something has is solving the problem. If something has changes because something isn't right, or what, this is the time we're supposed to find it. That's the system working.
Yes.
That's not cause for panic.
No. Not at all.
So that's where I'm at. Sorry.
Ooh. Totally understand.
I'm still not sleeping.
Yikes.
Well, shit.
Well, I mean,
I thought you had a good weekend. I thought you said you had a good weekend.
The weekend was all right. I had one night where I got 6 hours, not all at once. Couldn't have been all at once. 4 hours, the most I've had all in one go since this new round of bullshit started, 4 hours. But the one night I got 6 hours, it was 4 hours in one shot. And then the other two was like 30 to 45 minutes ago for the remainder.
Wow.
I'll go to bed and then wake up like a couple hours later, but then I'll go right back to sleep. But especially now at this time of year, I wake up consistently at 5 because of the time change, where I used to wake up at 6 right before my alarm goes off.
Yeah.
So there's just times where I'm just like every 40 minutes I wake up for and long enough for me to look at my phone and I just lay back down. I compartmentalize my consciousness into gather this information. Nope, not enough. Go back to sleep.
Huh. That's interesting.
The only thing I do is look at the phone. If the phone isn't this number, that doesn't equal wake up time. Go back to sleep.
And you're totally able to do that.
Yeah. The more I think about it, it is my superpower. It's not really going to get me on the first string of the X-Men, but God damn it. I could compete in the Olympics. National sleeping team.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Karen hates me because she wakes up at 4 and she's up till 7. She woke up and she's awake.
Yeah.
There's no going back to sleep. I'm like, Brookie. I can sleep through you waking up. Or if I do wake up because you got up, I'll just go right back to sleep.
Right.
First, is the house on fire? No. Okay. Back to sleep.
Wow.
Why are you up? Okay. Nothing important. Back to sleep. I was doing something.
Wow.
I grew up with a really annoying brother, and for the better part of my childhood, I shared a room with him, so I can sleep through anything.
That is a good point.
I acquired these skills at a young age.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and noise doesn't really bother me. Like, if I go upstairs to go to bed and Karen's already in bed, no matter how much I creep into the room, she will wake up. And that'll take her an hour to get back to sleep. Meanwhile, I come in, slip in, lay down, and I'm sleeping within 15 minutes.
Wow.
If there's a thunderstorm, I am going to sleep better.
Yeah.
That's a lullaby. Just open the window so I can hear it. Perfect.
Hmm.
I wrote down a story idea the other day. Actually, it was, I don't remember what inspiration was, but the initial thought was souls cling to me.
Souls cling to me.
Yes. It's like when you go somewhere where the souls of the dead are, like, or people just passing, souls will, they, like, see me as a, as the light at the tunnel.
And just sort of glom on to you?
Glom on to me. And I can kind of carry, they kind of hang on to me until I'm able to shed them. And now this is this character I'm trying to think of. The way they shed these souls is kind of an energy transference. So I was thinking kind of like the soul magic, soul caster kind of thing. So he's not exactly an exorcist. He's more using the lost spirits for his own gain or something. I don't know.
Okay.
That's as far as I got. I had this image of this person walking, and then there's this varying, a whole kaleidoscope of motes, little motes of light floating around him, some brighter, some dimmer, you know, tiny little specks of light, some like flashlight bulb kind of, depending on, you know, their potency.
Okay.
But he is both caretaker and abuser of these souls.
Oh.
Because at some point, his using them moves that energy on to the next realm.
Uh-huh.
So it's a necessity. That's how they move on. But not all souls. Not all souls linger. Some find their own way. But whether or not this person would like actively seek out souls to collect, or they, he, she, are trying to avoid them, or just trying to get rid of them, kind of, I see dead people kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people can't interact with them, but they could see them on him. Like, they think it's his aura, but it isn't his at all. He would have, like, kind of followers for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Gotcha.
People think he is something, but really he's the middleman. I thought I had some kind of a curiousness to it.
I dig it.
It definitely needs some things answered before it could go any farther, but that's an idea. I thought since I had a strip done so early, I could do another strip, but the only other strip I could think of is basically the same joke, but Daryl. Ordering a bunch of stuff for the event. And then God reminding him it's only a short time. Wait, what? So, I think I needed it.
I think it'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, but it's the same joke, isn't it?
So?
Is it?
Yeah, he's like ordering a bunch of T-shirts and all this kind of stuff. Cool, cool. You know, everybody's hyped about this. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Oh, wow. You sure ordered a lot of these. Uh-huh. You do know it's only one day. Yeah, but we can move a lot of product in one day. No, it's like 4 minutes. What? And like the last panel, he's just got a sign where he's like, you know, $10 or 10 gold, 5 gold, 6 for 4 gold. Yeah. Trying to move
away. Okay. I mean,
I think it's the same joke.
Okay. Then fine. It's the same joke. Don't fucking do it.
I won't. You can't make me. No.
Fine.
It is, though, isn't it? I mean, it's the same. It hinges on the same short time span.
I'm not going to tell you what to do. You do you, man.
Yeah, if I hit a wall with one of the clock drawings, maybe I'll doodle. Or I'll doodle it and save it for one of the weeks where I can't think of shit.
Yeah.
How's a cool clicky noise doing?
Cool clicky noise.
Yeah, this strip. It makes a cool clicky noise. Or neat clicky noise.
Right. It's doing okay so far. Not as good as last week, but I mean, last week was
pretty epic.
Pretty fantastic. So, you know, I had to remind myself of that as I was looking at the strip this week, because it was like, oh, it's not, why isn't it doing good? And I was like, oh, right, okay, it's not that it's not doing good, it's that it's just doing normal.
It's doing normal. The last one did really well.
Yes.
So where does 13 grand fall in the scope of things?
Pretty fucking high.
Really? Cool.
Yes. Yes.
Like top 10?
I think it might be top 5 at this point.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
So, you know, there's that.
And these are to the site?
This our site?
Or is this everywhere?
This is everywhere. Site, okay. Facebook, Reddit, all that. So, but I mean, still, I mean, we're like 35 to 40% is to the site, which is not bad. I mean, all things considered, that is not bad.
That's higher than I would have expected.
Right.
Now, when they click on it, that's just people coming straight to the site to see it.
Yes.
Not like clicking Reddit and being directed to the site because they can't. No. That is not how that works, right?
No, that's not how that works.
And Facebook, they click on it, they see it there. It doesn't go to the site.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah, it's...
And that's not just me bringing it up just to reference it for the next time. That's way too many.
We're doing great.
Cool.
Going really well. You should be very proud of yourself, sir.
Yeah. I really wanted to transfer into people come here looking for that and more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You need to figure out what the more is.
Yeah. We do. But I think we can get there. It's just gonna take some time.
I'm still noodling around that game mechanic I was talking about. Yeah. What I shared.
Okay.
Last week about how to change how that all works.
Yeah.
The resource slash, because basically the heroes have the elements on them, and those are the resources.
Okay.
You don't tap, you just have to have it.
Right.
And you could, and you only have 5 cards in your hand, so you can empty your hand if you want in your turn or are capable. At the end of your turn, you draw back up to 5 for the next person's turn.
But, okay.
Yeah, I just see that working. I don't know.
Sure.
So I see that functioning as a thing I want to do. And there's its cost. Here's the currency to pay that. I see that all working in relationship. It's just, how does that translate to whatever this thing is doing and to what?
Okay.
And how is the thing it's trying to do it against reacting?
Okay. You see that?
I was starting to think maybe it's a you have your heroes or your fodder. I guess no, the fodder would be the monsters. The adventurers, you have those. Those are your currency. Those are what you're attacking with. And you also have this pile of fodder over here.
Uh-huh.
And those are kind of like not your hit points, but you're trying to diminish your opponents before they diminish yours.
Okay.
You're trying to burn through their dungeon before you burn through theirs. So it's your charge to somebody attacks mine and flip it over. They have the same little icons on them. My cards in my hand work in conjunction with them as well. Success or failure. That makes sense?
I think I'll just need to see it like
in hand.
Yeah. Like it sounds like it makes sense, but I'm struggling to, you know, parse that in my brain.
Well, there's it's kind of like your coop, but instead of your coop being your active things, those are the feathers.
Right.
So say I have 9 there. I flip over, or I get dealt so many, depending on the number of players. Everybody gets so many.
Sure.
And you flip over one, and because player 2 is coming after me. I flip over the top one. That's what he's coming after. That's the door. That's the corner of the dungeon he just walked into.
Okay.
There sits this monster. He has to deal with it.
Okay.
Maybe heroes or adventurers and monsters have a little number on them to represent initiative. Like this one goes first, or this one goes before you. This one goes, you have to play. You get to go before the monster does, but nope, this one goes before you, kind of thing. I get to play cards from my hand, attacks, defenses, whatnot, in response to you coming after my monster.
Okay.
If you defeat it, you claim it. Maybe it isn't a matter of you going maybe you don't even have to have the pile by you. Maybe it's just the central pile, and you just say who's drawing the card. Like, I'm going after player 2. They draw the monster card, and they play it. It's their charge to command that monster in your combat.
Okay.
Rather than someone volunteering to set up. And the goal is to basically accumulate. I think it was the experience points, right? On the monsters had experience points. You get so many and you win, you finish.
Yes.
So it's now your responsibility to keep me from getting those experience points.
Okay.
And because I'm reacting to your attacks and you're trying to kill my monsters, and so chances are I'm going to kill your heroes. So I keep calling them heroes, your adventurers. That takes in place the rinse and repeat of the adventurers. They're constantly dying. They're constantly being replaced. They're constantly just being shuffled back in.
Yeah.
Because no one ever dies in Asmodendex. They just get put back to the back in line.
Try. True. Again. Try as you might, you just can't die.
Yeah. Can't die, can't escape, can't win. I was thinking of something like a dead hero token, like dead wizard token. Counts against your experience. The more heroes you die, the more experience you need to win. So trying to keep your heroes alive is actually, preferable.
Okay.
How would you track that? I don't want to add another icon, another token or dial to the game.
Right. That's probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
If we do it, though, custom size.
Of course. Why would we do anything but custom non-industry standard size?
Yes, 12-sided die, unique printing.
Yeah. Yeah, if we do dials, it's got to be a brass centerpiece.
Fuck yeah.
You know, because why wouldn't it be?
You gotta print it landscape.
Yeah.
And Grimlock Smash.
Yeah.
God, that was it was so awful, yeah. But so fun.
it was so abusive to myself. that's fun. I might be able to playtest that game mechanic with the proxies I have now, just to kind of see if that works. From what I've seen of the cards, I think the equipment is the weakest part, because you play an equipment, then the hero dies and that equipment's gone. It's like almost before it was played. It may as well be an action card.
Yes.
Like a scroll rather than a magic wand or a staff. Something that gets cast and is back in the pile. Magic arrows that got shot rather than a bow that gets quipped.
Okay.
Just so the stuff gets put back in the shuffle, because everybody's drawn from that same pot. Everybody's drawn the same actions. And everybody's using, you know, their hands to defend their turn at dungeon monsters and do their turn attacking someone else.
Sure.
So your hand is constantly being refresh, much like, oh, cluck, you know, your turn, your hand gets empty, and then you go back to five cards. But all those five cards need to be viable, playable, useful on almost every turn. And I was thinking, of wording like, here's a great sword attack does +3 damage. But if you have a barbarian, roll a d6 and add it to it. So here's, you can use this, even if all you have is a wizard, you can still use this +3 attack. But if you have a barbarian, it's going to do more. Or here's a scroll. Anyone can read it. It's going to do this damage. But if you are a wizard or priest or a bard, you can roll this and die and it'll do more damage.
I kind of dig that.
I want to incorporate like 1 to 2 d6s. Like some cards, some spells are just crazy. You know, roll 2d6. It doesn't do any damage. You just roll the 2d6. You know, Molotov cocktail kind of thing. Anyone can do it. And it's totally chaos. It's going to be either awesome or it's going to kill everything. Or worthless or kill everything.
Okay.
But, I don't want every card to have a die roll, but I do want some to play on some of the classes have an advantage with such and such thing.
Sure.
or like stiletto, it does, you know, 3 damage. It's poison damage if you're a rogue, meaning, you know, even if you don't kill it, as long as you hit with this, it dies. So unless they dodge an attack, they're going to get killed by it. Unless
wow.
Unless they're immune to poison, because some of the monsters, you know, like skeletons, immune to poison. Uh-huh. Zombies. Why not? But that only works if you have a rogue in play.
Okay.
And remember, these are also cards that the monsters are playing against you.
Correct.
Hence, Adventurer's Recycle. Adventurer's okay. Turnover. Adventurers constantly are refreshed.
It have to be.
Yeah. Well, remember the one time we played it, every turn you had different 3 because they died. Or you would use those abilities to summon, you know, above your max to try and do something really cool, and then half of them would die in the effort.
True.
Yeah. That's if it's going to be based on the strip, it really has to be that brutal.
True.
Did you see that? I just saw a Lego thing. The Lego Corporation put out instructions to the, I think it's the Los Angeles police, to stop putting Lego figurine heads over the faces of non-convicted suspects that are like arrested.
It wasn't LA. It was out by LA. It was some small.
But I see the meme that says, "Yeah, they're not going to do that because only nerds read Lego instructions."
Yeah,
I thought it was funny, but I thought it was more funny that they used those heads to cover up their faces. And it wasn't just like the basic plain Lego face. It was the ones with like the grimace and, you know, the side eye and all kinds of funny shit.
Yeah, I kind of agreed. I think it was John Oliver that talked about it a little.
Oh, right. I haven't watched it in a while.
That, you know, the police aren't, because they had the chief of police on who mentioned that they were doing this, you know, for engagement with the community and shit like that. And it was just kind of like, yeah, but your job isn't to be like, you know, super engaging at the expense of other people.
Well, my understanding, these were people that, like, these photos go out, but they would normally blur their face or cover their face up with something.
Sure.
Well, what's the matter if they're putting a black dot or this yellow toy?
Optics. Intellectual property rights.
Yeah.
It's also an association with the project, with the product.
Yeah.
Product being associated with criminality or what?
Well, John Oliver also talked about the fact that it was really kind of surprising that they would have such an issue with it, because Lego really really does their best to be as pro cop as it gets. Like, if you look at Lego sets that they've released in the Lego City collection, mm-hmm. It's a whole lot of the cops.
Yeah. They're very small town America.
Yes.
Everything is 1950s perfect.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, when they initially made the first sets, the castle was yellow.
because they didn't want to make gray bricks because kids could build like tanks and stuff. Yeah. Now they're building Star Destroyers and Death Stars. and it's probably that very thing that saved that company from bankruptcy.
Oh, it definitely is. Lego was I don't want to say they were in a bad way, but they
definitely really didn't have the attention of the collectors.
They needed the win that these things provided them.
Yeah, they needed collectability and some kind of popular culture attachment.
Yeah.
Did you watch that the Toys That Made Us?
I've not watched the Lego one, no.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's interesting. All of those are honestly interesting. The He-Man one is still my favorite.
I would probably still skip the He-Man one.
No, I just thought those guys were fucking hilarious.
Oh, it's more about the fact that I, even now, I'm 44 years old. I don't know shit about it.
Never. My Brian was the one that was a huge He-Man fan. And we would turn it on. We'd watch a few seconds. And if we'd seen it already, we'd switch back to Voltron or something. Even if we'd seen that 1,000 times. He only got to see episodes once. Because me and Michelle hated it. But
never allowed to watch it, so I just kind of like never did.
But Elizabeth was home this weekend and she was asking me if I ever watched the end of Voltron, the new Netflix series.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think I got past season 3. I think I watched it and then it just kind of, I think we were waiting on the next season and I never jumped in when the next one came out. And she goes, I watched it to the end and it was fucking horrible.
Wow.
It's what they did to it was, you know, she was just complaining about it. And I go, so you hate watched it? She goes, oh, absolutely. She goes, they just made so many dumb character choices. Like, you know, this character ended up with this other character and then she immediately dies. Like, okay, that's interesting. And this character all of a sudden is gay. This character is our gay character. We need a gay character. Last season, here. Oh, by the way, did we mention? And I was like, oh, I'm glad I didn't watch it beyond that.
Yeah.
Up till then, I thought it was great. I love the animation. Love the look of the new Voltron. The way the lines looked and the way the Voltron assembled worked.
Yeah.
It had a weird, like, kind of shield on its shoulder.
Okay. Like a
pauldron kind of thing looking. It was, and then when the lion was, you know, by itself, it also had that little like shield kind of thing on its back.
Yeah,
it was neat.
Yeah, I did not watch the new Voltron. I was allowed to watch Voltron. Didn't care about Voltron.
You were allowed to watch Voltron even with the freaking witch and everything?
I don't think my parents ever saw the witch.
Okay. All those monsters they'd sent to fight Voltron were basically twisted with dark magic robots and humans and beasts.
Yeah, I think my parents missed that part because it was robots in space.
They bought into the hype, huh?
Okay. I mean, what do you expect, man?
You mean they'd have to pay attention? And actually know what their kid is consuming?
That's asking an awful lot.
Yeah. this must be AI. Oh, maybe it isn't. There's a picture of this girl sitting on the couch reading an iPad. Her leg is in a cast. That's her left leg in a cast. But if you look at the foot, it is clearly her right foot. So I'm like, oh, that's AI. That has to be. Because it put the wrong foot on the wrong leg.
It's either AI or some sort of...
I would guess it's AI just by the one thing AI can do pretty consistency is lighting, and this one has really well visualized light source. So, but it didn't say, usually they say AI created, but that person didn't. Huh. It's getting really fucking ugly out there.
Yeah.
There's so much shit. And you can... I watched a YouTube video of artists talking about it and basically trying to illustrate to someone who doesn't understand what it is or what it means, why it's bad for a whole entire profession.
Yeah.
Because now in minutes, you can generate hundreds of images based on a 15-word prompt. And you can put an artist's name in that prompt, and it'll reference that artist's art on anywhere on the internet and do it in their style.
That's shitty.
Yeah. And they this video I showed, they had like 20 images up. And it said 5 of these are originals by this artist. The other 15 are AI generated. Only 2% of people polled picked out the correct 5.
Wow. And
probably because they were familiar with them.
Wow. That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, and that's a style cultivated by a professional artist over how long?
A while.
A lifetime.
Yeah.
That is now replicated in minutes by someone whose attention span is that long. And the other side of it is, even if people are against AI art, some artists, because their skill is, you know, to a certain level, even their original art is now viewed as, oh, that's AI, so I don't want it.
Right.
So now you're dismissing actual work because AI has grown to this point where you just assume that it is AI.
You know what that means, Ray?
What?
You need to start drawing more like me.
Yeah.
Because you know what no one will ever do?
No one will ever, Matt. No one will ever steal it?
No one will ever confuse mine for AI.
Well, I was thinking, they were saying you can take a sampling of a certain artist and put it into a program, and it'll only sample from that.
Oh, yeah?
I could take all my strips and put it in a database and then, you know, go through and point out, like, this is Daryl, this is Daryl, this is Daryl, this is Kevin, go, go, go. And then write a strip, and it'll generate one based on my art, based on previous illustrations. and, you know, put them in the situation, poses, settings that I tell it.
I mean, what I hear you saying is we're getting to a point where...
Two strips a week.
Yeah.
A strip every day.
Don't say shit like that.
That's what I'm hearing.
Every day a shitty strip, and then one of those is an actual one I drew.
Looking at some of the shit that's out there.
Oh. Every time I see an artist or I see someone's work that I'm just like, wow, that's fucking gorgeous. I wish I could do that. I also see next to it, somebody's like, oh, someone please help this person. So I don't know if it's personal growth, but I'm getting to the point where I'm okay with what I can do.
Yeah. So I've realized very much so that style is a fingerprint. And tastes for styles are almost as equally fingerprint-like.
Yeah. Do they like jets? Kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. And I've kind of come to that conclusion as I've, you know, I've looked over the stuff that I create, music, you know, digital kind of stuff. You know, and I look at your art and I look at, you know, art from Snap or, you know, old Marvel comics or things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I used to think Kirby was shit. Now I understand the appeal.
Right.
It's both a, I tried to do that myself and I appreciate how much work that was. Yes.
Yeah.
The two legs are different lengths, but I know what he's doing. It isn't, right. Is that anatomically perfect? It is, does it feel like that character's coming off the page? Yes,
like
it does.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there the perspective involved in like a comic piece of art is something that, you know, kind of blurs the line on anatomically correct kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I love...
Mine is horrible.
I love Scotty Young art. I love Dan Hip art.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Jim Lee art.
The snap cards that I've seen of Jim Lee? Yeah, it's like 90s Jim Lee. Right. And honestly, he kind of stagnated in 90s.
I didn't like Jim Lee art in the 90s.
I did because he was so detailed and it was so crisp and very, it was just so 90s. The belts, the straps, the goggles, right. The shoulder pads, all that shit was so 90s comics. And looking back, it's like, yeah, that's so dated. I want something new now.
So I brought up, I really enjoy Scotty Young, Dan Hip. They both have kind of a playful, childish, whimsical style to
mm-hmm.
Like, no matter what the piece of art is, even when, you know, Scotty isn't doing like the baby versions of things. You know, if you look at
the Deadpool. The one where he's sitting on a pile of shit.
Right. Deadpool. You look at his six different Rocket Raccoon variants in Snap. Like, he has a playful, whimsical style to him.
Yes.
On the other hand...
That interview was awesome where he's talking about how he came up with his style.
Yes. Then there is Ryan Gonzalez. Now, I'm going to say something here, and I'm not trying to belittle the artist or their work. That style is not for me. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. It's not something I ever would seek out, and I know that this artist.
Yeah, I don't like it either. It's very Japanese food container art.
Yes. And while
it makes me think of that's a ramen noodle box.
Right.
I don't like it either.
It's just not my thing. I know other people like it, and I know some people struggle with the fact.
That's not to say I don't think his rogue is really cute.
Okay.
The one where she's like coming out of the comic panels and it's got all the little characters around her. That's very cute. But
yeah, I don't
like it. I don't like it. His Shang-Chi is ugh. Hate it.
Yeah. That is not my style. But I recognize it's not that I don't like it because I think it's bad. That's clearly just that style was not for me.
I went up to the art museum last week when I was off and just kind of walked around, you know, just an hour or two up there, just checking out stuff. A lot of religious, you know, pictures of Jesus and angels and
sure
sculptures and chairs and churches and crosses and all kinds of crap. But, you know, it was still really great. Yeah, I was talking to Elizabeth about it, and she's like, I don't want to go there unless I can have somebody tell me what does this mean? And I go, that's being, I hesitate to call myself an artist. I always hate that, you know, it's not something you call yourself, but
as a creator,
as a creator, soon as I draw something, what I say it means doesn't matter.
Right.
It's only what you see and what it means to you, because everything, all your experiences, all your likes, dislikes, experiences, movies, books, people you've met, places you've visited, factor into how you see that.
Yes.
And I cannot consider that when I'm drawing it and trying to make it for you. Because it's always going to be for me.
That is called your lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I go... I think that's why I like impressionism, post-impressionism, all that freer stuff, rather than the stuff's a little more Renaissance and the more detailed paintings. They just seem there's nowhere for me to guess.
Right.
I want to look at a picture and I want to guess, and I want to fill in the spaces between. I want to see, you know, between the brush strokes.
Yeah, it's why I'm a huge fan of cubism and surrealism. It's you know,
I love that quote by Picasso. He said he took him years to master painting, but it took him a lifetime to learn how to draw like a child.
Yep.
And this is somewhat, I would never consider myself a huge Picasso fan, but in that statement, I understand why he painted that way.
Yeah.
And now I can appreciate his effort, whether I like it or not. I understand his effort, what he was trying to do.
It's funny that you've kind of landed in this conversation. This is the exact reason why I don't ever want to be in a band again. I want to record music. I want to write music. I want to do these things. I don't ever want to be in a band again. I am okay with the process of me writing something, me recording something, me releasing something, and the consumer assigning meaning to the thing that I created.
Okay. Totally okay with that. What I struggle with now in my middle age-ness, I don't want to do that with another creative musician. That's not what I want to do. They have their vision. They're gonna take this thing that I wrote, this riff, this whatever that I wrote, and they're going to go through the processes of assigning meaning to it to, you know, put their piece, their part of our band piece on.
Don't take this the wrong way, but mm-hmm. that's exactly how I feel about the strip.
Totally understand.
You guys help me immensely. I talk through strip ideas. You guys shoot out ideas and correct my spelling sometimes to the point where whole conversation changes. but because I can't get something to work right. But trying to have a voice while giving the other person a voice on right. something and still owning it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's where I've always, I mean, I know you guys right from the beginning are like, oh, if you get to that point, we need to work. I mean, that is the driving force behind me trying to come up with something every week is I want to laugh. I hope to God I make you guys laugh. And I want it to be something that you're happy that it's underneath the Foolish Media name.
Sure.
That's basically where I sit.
Totally understand that. Yeah, I mean,
it's the same thing as you're saying with the you want to create it, but you don't want to collaborate.
Yeah, and it's nothing against the guys that I was in a band with. I'm still good friends with one of them. I would still have a beer with two of them. There's only one of them that I don't ever want to see again. But, you know, it's one of those things like it's nothing against them as people. It's just, you know, I don't want to have to.
You don't want to ride a tandem bike. You want to blaze your own trail.
Yeah, I'm at a point now where even if someone else's input would better the composition, I just, you know, thanks but no thanks. I'm okay.
Yeah, there's points when I need help, and sure. there's my limitations I know I possess, but for the most part, I think 260 strips down, I think I know how to do it. It's just some days it's harder than others.
Sure. I mean, I'll put it this way. I would be more apt to ask my youngest two children for insight than I would be to ask another musician.
I get it.
It's weird.
Well, there's weird. There's inherent value in the, and it's probably going to sound elitist or wrong, but the ignorance of a non-professional. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, when I draw something and I go to Karen and I'm like, does this look right? It's because I can't see what's wrong with it. And when she's like, the one hand looks crooked or too big, I'm like, okay, that's it. I know right. there's something wrong, but I can't see it anymore.
Right.
Too in it. I need someone who doesn't draw, doesn't see that, just sees the lines and tries to associate it to a living thing and can see what's why it's not right.
Well, those two kids do play music.
Yes, yes, but not they, ignorance, I guess. it's the separation.
From
your effort and their understanding.
Right, right. They also, you know, they grew up with me in the house playing my stupid little songs and writing things and showing things. And they have a much, they have an understanding of the fingerprint, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sending the girls and Karen a picture of the strip last week, the button. Darby was telling me, yeah, I was driving and Abby was reading it to me and explaining it because I sent it to her phone and they were driving back from Florida.
Oh.
She was reading it to me and describing the pictures and, you know, she was giggling, trying to. She said it was almost funnier than a joke, her trying to explain what was happening.
Nice.
I'm like, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I mean, half the joy of that strip was the click, 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 click.
Yeah.
And Kevin's, I don't know, idiocy of it. It makes this cool, neat clicky noise.
I think the best musical compliment I've ever gotten was, Kes was like 16. She might have just turned 17. I don't know. We were at Metronome. She was shopping for something. And she sat down. She was waiting her turn in line. So she picked up a guitar, plugged it in, you know, and she's fiddling around with a few things. And then after about a minute of playing, I start hearing this song. I know this song. I wrote this song. I wrote this song, I don't know, 20 years ago? 20, actually more than that, 24 years ago? And it was my kid playing one of my songs from the band. In Metronome, we had never talked about it. I had never showed her how to play it. She took it upon herself to learn to play it and decided, you know, to make Dad tear up at Metronome was the best way.
Little shit. I love her evilness even more now.
Yeah. That was the time to show Dad that she had learned, you know, his song. Because up until that point, as far as like the stuff that I did when I was in the band, like
that was in the past. Yeah, that was
I left
before the band. Her died. Yeah.
Yes, I left the band when Athena was pregnant with her. Like she has no memories of that time. Aiden doesn't have any memories of me in the band. I mean, he was two.
That's wild.
So, you know, I guess I always kind of figured, well, you know, that's just old dad rock music. They're not going to give a shit about that.
What a little shit. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'll never forget that day.
I can see why.
Fuck.
Wow, it's 10:05.
It is.
We have fucking rambled.
We have.
A little more than normal.
Yeah. I just looked at the clock and I was like, oh shit.
Well done, boys.
Well done.
I'm going to go ahead and kill the stream. Be excellent to each other, everybody. We'll be back next week. I think we will. Yeah, we will.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.